Welcome to the ANews Podcast. This is episode 30 for September 22nd, 2017. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. The podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at the email address podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information and commentary at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial: Critique versus Compliments. I am someone who has a hard time with support. I can dish it out, but I don't take it very well. Perhaps I spent too much time in my youth around people who said supportive things but didn't back them up. There's a lot of that in general. Or perhaps my family expressed caring through snark. Maybe those things and more. The bottom line, though, is that I deal best with critical feedback. In other words, this is how you could do better. What the fuck are you doing here? Why did you say that? Etc. But I recognize other people like support. They like, for example, the support sandwich with criticism layered between compliments, or just the compliments. Those people feel like they're stronger when they hear positive things about themselves and their projects. They feel those positive things are empowering. I feel like what empowers me is fighting. Not hate, necessarily, although hate is an option, but arguing, debating, competing. It's easy to overstate or oversimplify what I'm saying, but the underlying thought is that one of the things that keeps anarchists hostile with each other, even when we mostly agree in theory, is the simple but pretty basic question of which feels real and supportive, arguing or complimenting. It's slightly more refined, but related to people who argue for pacifism or for non-pacifism. Whichever has worked better for you in your life is probably the side you're going to come down on. This is all part of a bigger thesis on the personal, experiential underpinnings of what we believe and value, and how we talk about those things, and how that reflects anarchist thought. Just to note here that I'm using language that bugs me. Using support to mean something like nice, and critique to mean something like pokey, as in poking at things. Better words would acknowledge that I feel supported when I'm given honest, unafraid feedback, when I feel like the expectation is that I'm strong and capable and that I can do better. That's the kind of pushing that I like and that many of my friends like. Your mileage may vary. What's new this week? Living Autonomy, Anarchists Organize Relief Efforts in Florida, from It's Going Down. This is an interview with Desiree, also featured recently in a mini-interview with The Final Straw, who is doing aid work in Florida. It's about those efforts, including how folks are getting harassed by right-wingers and how unsuccessful that harassment has been. Quote, "I was in the Lower Ninth for 2 months after Katrina. There were folks who spent a lot of time there, founded the Common Ground Relief Collective, and saw how self-organization and leaderless anarchist-based work supported community self-determination and broke with traditional aid relationships and didn't other people. This approach of empowering people has flourished here. Every day I come in, the space is more gorgeous. There's new signs, artwork, new stations, and I think empowering people has magical and powerful results. And this is what is beat out of us every day in a capitalist system, and that's what we can see here, that the quality of the oil shows when the oil is pressed. I think the space could be recreated anywhere there is a community ready to empower each other and work in cooperation." Unquote.
Notes on the Bjor ZAD and the politics of eternity slash death. From Autonomies, a very interesting reflection that moves from the ZAD's zones of territorial struggle in Europe to what it might mean to be present for the end of human life, or at least Western civilization. Quote, "The ZADs of France, Zona Defendra, at Notre Dame des Landes, Testet, Roybon, and the many others elsewhere have emerged originally as moments of contestation against major infrastructure developments, public and private, typically outside of large urbanized spaces. The protests have then, in some cases, been followed by occupations of the contested territories, with the aim of literally physically impeding the development projects. It is then bodies against machines, the war machine of the state, with all of its apparatuses of control and repression, and the physical machines that remake space and life, to serve the movement of capital commodities. The very real physical nature of the protest then calls something into play which is rarely, if ever, present in momentary city protests, and perhaps not sufficiently reflected upon, Bodies need to be fed, sheltered, clothed, cared for. To provide for these needs and more, a protest that extends in time must gain roots. It must become to some degree self-sustaining. The ZADs then become expressions, experiments in other non-commodified forms of life. Organized collectively, horizontally, self-managed without a center or leadership, open to all who share in its vision, the ZADs prefigure a different world, an anti-capitalist world opposed to the kinds of infrastructure investments essential to capitalism's continuous expansion. Unquote.
Strengthening Our Politics, Commitment and Growth, BRRN, Fourth National Convention. From the Black Rose Federation. BRRN stands for Black Rose, Rosa Negra. This is a report back on a conference of anarchists of the left. I've been agitating for someone to put together a genealogy of different anarchist tendencies, and this report back offers a start. Quote, coalescing local politics to national developments and moving away from activism and towards reflective and intentional militancy based on a shared strategic framework, unquote. This federation is for all the leftist things. They want to coalesce local politics to national developments and move away from activism and toward reflective and intentional militancy based on a shared strategic framework, unquote. This report back gave me the jitters as it sounded like every organizationalist conference I've ever been to.
Santiago, Barricades and Clashes, 44 years since the military coup. From 325. Memorial actions for those murdered and disappeared. From a leaflet found at the scene. Quote, today we do not simply commemorate our fallen from the dictatorship. We also claim their forms of struggle and organization that serve as an example of subversion against capital, the state, and its repressive apparatus. Unquote.
The iPhone X proves the Unabomber was right. From the mainstream Chicago Tribune. Decades later, mainstream people are still being reality-checked by Ted Kaye's manifesto. It's easier because he's in prison, of course. The author also notes that others have also noted the devil's bargain we are stuck in. Quote, the problem is hardly a new one. In his book, Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind, Yuval Noah Harari argues that the agricultural revolution that took place 10,000 years ago was, quote, history's biggest fraud. In the preceding 2.5 million years, when our ancestors lived as hunter-gatherers, they worked less, quote, spent their time in more stimulating and varied ways, and were less in danger of starvation and disease, end quote, than afterward. Farming boosted the population but chained humans to the land and demanded ceaseless drudgery to plant, tend, harvest, and process food, while making us more vulnerable to famine, disease, and war. People who had evolved over eons for one mode of life were pushed into a different mode at odds with many of their natural instincts. Unquote.
Anarchists to confront the IACP in Philly this October. Posted by Anonymous. This is a call-out against the annual conference of the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Quote, this is a call for an ambitious mobilization to directly disrupt the conference, to publicly spread an explicitly anti-police position, and to attempt to open up space that is hostile to state control. We hope to do so using both coordinated and decentralized autonomous actions in the area immediately surrounding the conference in Center City and throughout Philly. Unquote. This call-out includes some specifics about vendors, etc. at the conference, for any who might find that interesting.
Turkey. Anarchist magazine distributors jailed for 6 months. From freedomnews.org. Three volunteers for an anarchist newspaper have been jailed in the latest move of the Turkish government against the press. Quote, the Turkish authorities are now jailing journalists, shutting down radio and TV channels, and censoring internet in an attempt to silence criticism. 122 journalists are in jail, and over 150 media have been banned since mid-July. More than 2,500 journalists have lost their jobs, and arrest warrants have been issued for dozens of media workers. Some families of journalists who are in hiding or who have fled have been arrested in order to force the journalists to surrender. Unquote.
Good TV as a roadblock to becoming ungovernable, or anything else, really. There is a decades-long tradition of progressive writing against television. This article joins that tradition, pointing out that good, that is, thoughtful, realistic, thought-provoking, entertainment that doesn't challenge the status quo, works to normalize and universalize lifestyles that anarchists reject. In this era of scrambling to come to terms with the internet, it's kind of charming to read something criticizing television. Quote, capitalism breeds isolation. In no other society in history has humanity experienced such separation between themselves and others. This has come to be because divided people are easier to control. Where people regularly encounter others, potential exists for a variety of interaction, behaviors, and relationships to develop over time. In these spaces, it becomes possible for people to build trust, share frustrations, and maybe take rebellious action together. Strikes, riots, and the building of subversive bonds need these spaces to unfold. There is a reason why totalitarian societies enact laws forbidding more than a certain number of people from converging in public. TV is liberal democracy's workaround for this problem, and that it draws people towards a voluntary isolation. Unquote.
Firm statements, soon to be proven wrong. From eukaryot.com, a, quote, counter-propaganda cell, unquote. This is another thoughtful piece that reminds me of Species Being and maybe Nihilist Communism, two books by reflective British anti-state commies, not how they would describe themselves, books that I disagree with significantly, but that provoke interesting lines of thought and that directly question things that few other political people even mention. Firm Statements includes a personal, world-weary tone and some hard truths that are quite reminiscent of the DuPonts. Quote, currently, most of our political inventions follow rules laid down by a few European men and women from past centuries. The only thing that these tired rules can stimulate is the compulsive pleasure of the political ritual. Following these rituals makes easy our attentive policing by a bourgeois order that has long ago learned how to re-signify our games, how to make them irrelevant or impracticable. We might still be ahead of our adversary at the level of structural analysis, are we? But the bourgeois order, despite its rudimentary logic, prevails at the level of tactical and strategic struggle. Unquote. It's a long piece, and I'm sure there are things in it I disagree with, but it's an interesting disagreement, and frequently that's far better than agreement.
Looking back, 3 years since Eric's arrest. Quote, Eric has been locked up for 3 years now. He was arrested on September 16th, 2014. Between Kansas, Oklahoma, and now Colorado, he has seen a lot of different jails and prisons, and has had his share of struggles along the way. There's no denying it has been a long road, and unfortunately there's an even longer road ahead. Unquote. Write him.
Podcasts, Hotwire number 5. 34 minutes. Rebel Girl actually declaims a bit less this episode. Yay for human voices. Another murder of an LGBTQ person by police. St. Louis protests of not guilty verdict for ex-cop who murdered another black man. Another car attack against Antifa, this time in Portland. Anti-racist and anti-fascist student marches. A Nazi gets knocked out. Smack talk about an overhyped militia rally. Juggalos can be anti-fascist too. 3 people in Turkey jailed for handing out banned anarchist newspapers. Tampa Convergence Space is happening and has resources like water, etc. Ongoing. Mini houses as a way to block access to planned pipeline. Anti-pipeline actions in Louisiana also. Direct action against Enbridge. So many actions against pipelines that there's a new podcast dedicated to them. It's called End of the Line. You can find it at pipelinepodcast.org. Police are now doxing arrestees and have yanked a popular leftist chant. Interview with protesters in St. Louis. Update on grand jury and Katie Yao. FBI approach minor to testify against their family. Update on J20, political prisoner birthdays.
Topic of the week, socialization. 6 years ago, on September 17th, the Occupy moment began. Occupy was perhaps a high watermark for the North American anarchist space, although the anarchist idea and practice of occupation on different levels goes back much further. Occupy, assemblies, gatherings, meetings, etc., provide anarchists with the face-to-face social experiments and opportunity to learn an anarchist culture and survive. What is your preferred anarchist gathering? Is this a public or private invite-only meetup? Where are we meeting? In the urban space or somewhere more rural out in the woods? Will the meetup be more ideologically focused or more open-ended? Anarchists have popularized the book fair event, but what can we imagine outside of such a space?
So I guess I enjoy most permutations of anarchist events. Most recently I've become excited by the idea of invite-only sort of weekend retreats. A group of my friends and I are starting to do that, and it's both ideologically focused and also project focused, but so far these events haven't had any agenda or a particular center of gravity. I mean, a little bit, but not so much. And I'm looking forward to that as a way in which larger, as in like more than a dozen people, can sit down and sort of envision what kind of anarchy they would like to develop together. because one of my concerns with not just the book fair model, but with most anarchist events here in the Bay Area, is I have no interest in what the large majority of anarchists want to talk about. And by that, I mean that, a lot of times those conversations are dictated by people who are, 20 plus years younger than me, who have a particular fascination with being photographed. So I think right now I'm feeling the idea of doing more private events and what does that look like? And are you lucky enough to have enough people in your life that you can actually have people show up? Because I think that obviously this isn't available for someone who's younger or doesn't know as many people.
Or is more isolated.
Sure.
I am at a point now in my life where I'm enjoying book fairs very much, but I think that's mostly because I am always tabling. And so all of the pressure and anxiety that comes with a large event full of many people, and especially as long as I've been going to these things now, I know so many of the faces in the room, even if I don't know them. And there was frequently an expectation of chatting with people, even though I am not necessarily sure how I know you, or I'm not sure if I remember you, or even if I do, we don't necessarily know each other. So it's the anarchy sort of relevant version of small talk, which I don't like and I don't feel that I'm very good at. So when I am tabling, they have to come to me. And the books are the very present counter between us. And you can talk about books.
Yeah, you always have something to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Or not talk about books, as the case may be. And it's a contained way to meet new people. Because while I want to meet new people, I don't necessarily place a lot of high expectation or value on new people and meeting them. So I had a great time at the Bay Area Anarchist Book Fair. I met several new people, with which I hope to be talking to more in the future. And so I think that that's the most public way that I engage in anarchists and anarchist spaces. And I'm liking it a lot right now, which was not always the case. And I feel like we've been doing the anarchists in invite-only, smaller, private thing for a really long time.
Sure. But in a different way, that we're doing it a bit more intentionally right now.
That's true. There is definitely something about everyone leaving home. Yes. And going to places where cell phone reach is spotty, and where there are not distractions. It is definitely better for me to not be in my home, to not be so adjacent to LBC, because there are always so many things to do. And you feel the press of that, even if you very much want to be present with the people that are present. So yeah, I definitely appreciate the, on some level, escapism of those events, so that the focus can be these people that I have affinity with around something that's very important to me, and just anarchy and conversations.
I mean, obviously the theme of this is as a way to celebrate the Occupy movement. Mm-hmm. And, I think it's worthwhile to talk a little bit about Occupy and would we like that again? And, what did we like and not like about Occupy? I think my biggest heartbreak of Occupy was that it didn't more aggressively move when it had the energy and the political will to occupying buildings and to basically, doing something like an American version of squatting. I think that even if that fight would have been lost, it would have been a fight worth having, in a way that defending the public parks was not worth having.
Sure.
Especially for all the different cities in which it was just getting cold.
Right.
A town like, anywhere USA would have been a lot more interesting if they would have tried to seize a building. Obviously New York and Oakland being the two hot spots of the Occupy movement.
Right.
If New York would have grabbed a building and had that sort of political line where it didn't respect private property, that would have made it a far more interesting event rather than sort of what it became, which was a brand name. Whereas in Oakland, there really was the will for it to happen. But instead, people's energy seemed to get sidetracked, both because of confusion around what a general strike really means and the success of that day. And then again, like that evening, the evening of the general strike, some people did try to occupy a building, but it seemed like the only people that were on board with that were the sort of young rapscallions, and it didn't become sort of a generalized thing to do anything other than cheer at. And then post that event, the next couple events were more focused on the docks and, you know, what does it look like to sort of be a wing of the union movement?
Yeah, my understanding is that for all the numbers of people involved in Occupy Oakland, the people who tried to occupy the building were actually a fairly small handful of
them. Yeah.
So it seems like Oakland, like New York, had critical mass, but critical mass in New York was so split in terms of class and politics that I'm not sure that it would have been possible, but it felt like it might have been possible here. But also, I was on the other side of the country.
So. I mean, also, what in the hell could you do in Zuccotti Park? Like, what could you seize? You know, that was within eyeshot.
There, almost nothing. Yeah. You would definitely have to move a little farther out to the fringes. And I went down to Zuccotti Park a couple of times, and, you know, there were celebrities speaking and, you know, really big, nice tents full of good-intentioned liberals from the Upper East Side. And don't get me wrong, there were absolutely anarchists and our ilk alongside of them. But there was definitely, you know, a power base in those people as well. And there were limits to what they were going to do or participate in, for sure.
I mean, you know, I continued to be inspired by Occupy because of the idea that occupation of space is, I think, you know, like a bare minimum to something truly radical happening in this country. And I don't see protest politics, you know, being related to that at all. And so I guess to me that was the interesting thing about this topic of the week and about the thread. But really this thread didn't really stand up to being interesting at all.
Do you look around you and see people who came into anarchy through Occupy and the politics that they are engaged in now?
That's a sad question, because I think that the answer is no. I don't think I have anyone close to me who came in through Occupy. I mean, I definitely know some people, but by and large, I'm not sure how much staying power it had in terms of like the kind of people that came in through it. I mean, I definitely know that there are some people who are active, who are sort of like, you know, who are really engaged in the current moment, who became first connected to the anarchist space through Occupy. But
feel like those people are the exception far more than
Well, they're definitely the exception, but they just didn't gravitate towards our politics.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Which I think is interesting and probably worth some reflection. You know, I think that because Occupy was so eclectic, a lot of those people who came in sort of, I mean, I don't want to be insulting because I don't feel that way, but many of them were, they came from button politics or bumper sticker politics.
Sure.
And it takes a while to process all the feels that you have, you know, when you realize how many things that there are to be rage, you know, upset about. To distill them down to something that actually feels actionable. And so maybe those people, you know, give them another 4 or 5 years and I'll see them more in our circles. But I do feel like, by and large, unless you're excited about insurrectionary zeal and by the sort of power of attack, which Occupy wasn't really about, then it takes you 10 years to find a sort of post-left anarchist politic.
You feel like it took that long out of the anti-globe series of, you know, those few years in there? I mean, I feel like I look around and there are definitely people that I know are here now, and that's where they came through.
No, the thing that was so special about that 2008 RNC moment was that some of the people who found themselves in that moment found themselves in a moment of insurrectionary glee. And that's why there was such a short road between them and post-left anarchism.
Right. No, whereas, now that I think about it, that's a lot. It's actually a lot more people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas the anti-globe period was much more. It took 10 years for any of those people to escape the orbits of the potential job hunts that they were on or the career paths that they were on.
So what do you think it looks like for, going back to the question in a different approach, large anarchist gatherings that are book fairs?
Well, obviously, I think in Europe that they're still possible, and perhaps are even still possible here in the U.S., but I'm not sure we'd be invited. But to speak to Europe, I mean, obviously the recent anti-G20 event that happened in Germany was a Gutenberg. That was a big event. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people came. And so I guess that speaks to the question, what does it take to have a big event? To have something really big to be eventing against. I'm not sure that they're...
A single focus, a single issue.
Yeah, again, I mean, one of the brilliant things about Occupy was it was something to actually meet for.
Right.
You know, I mean, obviously there were lots of against in there, but the idea of being together was the driving factor. And I'm not sure, and I would actually point to state agencies as being really successful at making us really not want to be together.
Yeah. I hear people, not of my generation, of the generation before me, your generation and older than you, talk about the anarchist convergences that happened in the
late 80s,
mm-hmm. Possibly early 90s, I think.
There were like three or four of them.
There were three or four of them, and there was a group of people here in the Bay who wanted to try to resuscitate that, put life back in this notion of anarchists gathering for the sake of gathering?
I mean, I think
part of my question is, yeah. Were those... single issue events, were they building around the same kind of thing?
But it was a really different time. That was a time when you didn't have a daily life with other anarchists.
It's true.
And that's really...
You went to these things to see your anarchist friends because you got so few opportunities to do so.
And to make
them. To communicate with them at all.
In other words, that was a time where even in the Bay Area, you didn't necessarily feel like you were part of a big movement. You know, whereas today, because of the internet, a lot of anarchists have plenty of time to see each other or experience each other. In daily life. But I would say that the right group could definitely, I think, throw a convergence like that again. I think that if Crime Think really put their energy behind it, they could mm-hmm. do it.
Do they still do their annual thing?
No. They stopped that after the Pittsburgh debacle.
Ah, yes.
The Smack a White Boy 2,
yes.
Was it?
Yeah. Yes.
But I, and probably we could, you know, throw together something that would feel like a couple hundred people. But, you know, I think that we would have the same question that Crime Think would have, to what end? Mm-hmm. And, you know, right now I'm quite sure that Crime Think is perfectly happy with the people that they're getting at their, you know, like, to some extent we could say the J20 was a Crime Think event. And,
sure.
And that sort of... Where they're at, what they want to do. And I'm not sure what it would look like to throw an anarchist convergence that sort of is against so many different types of anarchism as part of its entry fee, which is obviously what ours would look like an anarchist gathering without red anarchists.
I think that I would be interested in, if you were going to try to do a big thing, doing it in the middle of the country and really pushing for people who do their anarchy on the internet to come and get to do some anarchy in person. And I don't know what that looks like that's really putting up the big tent with the tall poles.
Sure.
But I think that could be interesting for lots of different reasons.
It would be wonderful. I would love to go to that event. I'm not sure I'd like to organize it.
I'm not sure that I would like to organize it, but it's certainly a thought. And yeah, definitely a way to connect with people that I'm sure that I would never connect with in any other capacity.
Can you see or can you imagine participating in something that's beyond Berkeley, that's like a Bay Area assembly? In other words, the last one that happened was sort of a famous event at the Negative Space. It was sort of an assembly for Bay Area anarchists to get together and mm-hmm. sort of work some stuff out as to mm-hmm. what we'd like to do together.
Yeah.
And it ended in clusterfuck. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine if another one were thrown that it wouldn't end the same way.
I'm sure that it would probably end the same way, but I would go anyway. Because
that's fair.
I cemented some good relationships that day. And again, it put me in a room with people that I don't know how else I would have gotten to be in a room in a meaningful way with them other than that. And I think we have too few of those opportunities.
It would be nice to see if we could do one in a de-escalated way.
Like, yes.
That doesn't have the sort of burden of that event.
Absolutely. That would be nice.
Awesome. Thank you for the conversation.
Yeah, thanks.
See you.
The weekly Anarchy 101 question and some answers. In this segment, we take questions and some of the answers and responses from the website anarchy101.org, a user-moderated Q&A site for anarchists to answer questions on anarchist thought and activity. Most questions on the site have a lot of commentary that we don't read, but it's certainly at least half the fun. The question this week is, anarchy is against authority. What is it for? The point of anarchy seems to start with people being against authority, like many rebellious types end up here at one point or another. I think anarchy is for something, not just against it. Would it ruin anarchy to put it in a positive term? Would the rebellious sort of be turned off? Answer number one. Many people think of anarchy as a positive project. The traditional tenets are mutual aid, direct action, and voluntary association. There are some others that have been added and are a bit more controversial, like transparency in relationships and projects, and ends and means not being in conflict with each other. That's on the daily practice as well as long-term level. But there are also people who urge prefiguration, building anarchist institutions right now, not waiting for a revolution, insurrection, attacking right now, not waiting for a revolution, etc. There's more to say about this, obviously. Answer number two. I am for the basic principles that Dot mentions, mutual aid, free association, direct action. These are critical to how I at least want to live my life. I'm human and I fuck up a lot. And are why I think anarchism as a lived practice is more than teenage rebellion. Nothing wrong with teenage rebellion, but over the years, I have come to see anarchism as much more of a negative project, by which I mean that I see my anarchism as a tool or a weapon for attacking the parts of the world and pieces of my life that I hate. I am trying to think of how to concisely define those in counterpoint to the three principles I mentioned above, but the closest I can get is capitalism, forced relations, and mediated life. I think there's a better way. Help! I'm often wary of anarchists who talk about prefigurative politics or who focus on the after-the-revolution side of things because we aren't there yet and we don't know what that looks like. Certainly, I have ways I prefer of relating to people, and to the best of my ability, I structure my life in conjunction with that, but I think trying to come up with a positive vision of the future, whether we are talking about feral bands of post-linguistic hunter-gatherers or fully automated luxury gay space communism, while perhaps appealing, and certainly something that not anarchists are always demanding, is also limiting, and I prefer to keep all the potential options on the table. Also, though, because I love Alexander Berkman, here is what he had to say about this, taken from the first issue of his newspaper, The Blast. Quote, "Do you mean to destroy? Do you mean to build? These are the questions we have been asked from many quarters by inquirers, sympathetic and otherwise. Our reply is frank and bold. We mean both, to destroy and to build. For, socially speaking, destruction is the beginning of construction. Superficial minds speak sneeringly of destruction. Oh, it is easy to destroy, they say, but to build, that's the important work. It's nonsense. No structure, social or otherwise, can endure if built on a foundation of lies. Before the garden can bloom, the weeds must be uprooted. Nothing is therefore more important than to destroy, nothing more necessary and difficult. Take a man with an open mind, and you will have no great trouble in convincing him of the falsehood and rottenness of our social structure. But when one is filled with superstition and prejudice, your strongest argument will knock in vain against the barred doors of his bigotry and ignorance. For thousand-year-old superstition and tradition is stronger than truth and logic. To destroy the old and the false is the most vital work. We emphasize it. To blast the bulwarks of slavery and oppression is of primal necessity. It is the beginning of really lasting construction. Thus will the blast be destructive, and the blast will be constructive. Too long have we been patient under the whip of brutality and degradation. Too long have we conformed to the dominant with an ineffective fist hidden in our pocket. Too long have we vented our depth of misery by endless discussion of the distant future. Too long have we been exhausting our efforts and energy by splitting hairs with each other. It's time to act. The time to act is now. The breath of discontent is heavy upon this wide land. It permeates mill and mine, field and factory. Blind rebellion stalks upon highway and byway. To fire it with the spark of hope, to kindle it with the light of vision, and turn pale discontent into conscious social action, that is the crying problem of the hour. It is the great work calling to be done. To work, then, and blasted be every obstacle in way of the regeneration. And the final answer. For my own practice, it's about being committed to the ongoing confirmation and clarification of consent in all the relationships of my life. Not something that is achievable as a fixed goal, but the process has compelled me to consistently interrogate power and try to address harm, both in myself and others, and that's led me to have a much deeper sense of trust and engagement with the people around me. If nothing else, it makes the world feel less shitty. As always, if you don't like the answers or have a question of your own, visit anarchy101.org. This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lino Mabel, written by Jackie. The editorial was compiled by Chisel, produced and narrated by Chisel and a friend. Thanks to the help of Aragorn and Ariel for the topic of the week conversation. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org to learn more, books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material at littleblackheart.com, news and up-to-the-minute commentary at anarchistnews.org. Give me